I love it if people walk in my door with mad news or a mad idea, you know, and not just like, oh, okay, I did the layout and I put the headshot in. And the older in style was a bit like that. It was very packaged, and I had to be like, just blow it up. But then giving people, and it took a while culturally because they were so used to doing it another way. But then when you blow it up and then you give people ownership over the thing that you blew up and go, that was yours. You did that. They get so proud.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Role Models Podcast, a podcast where we host candid conversations with inspiring women about their personal journeys, career histories, and all the valuable lessons and learnings they've picked up along the way. My name is David Noel, and I'm one of the two co-founders of Role Models, which is an event and podcast series that I started with my friend and co-founder, Isabel. Our guest in today's episode runs InStyle Magazine, one of the leading fashion media brands in the world. Her name is Laura Brown, and she is InStyle's editor-in-chief. Laura is originally from Australia, where she grew up on a farm, and she made her way to New York City to get her start in the fashion industry. She spent over 11 years at Harper's Bazaar before taking the lead at InStyle, and in this conversation, she takes us behind the scenes of what it's like to take the print and digital editions of an international fashion magazine to reach over 30 million women worldwide. Laura's energy and optimism are infectious. You will hear this in her voice, and I really admire the way Laura mixes fun and quirkiness with the ambition to create the best possible magazine for her readers. This is a fast-paced conversation filled with Laura's rare insights into the world of fashion magazines. We talk about the emerging generation of editors-in-chief, how to keep a print magazine relevant in a digitalized world, and advice on how to make your first steps into the fashion industries. Shout out to our patrons who support the creation of this podcast. Megan Quinn, who is a general partner at Spark Capital, who supports the organization 2040.org, and Anna Carolina, who is a leadership coach based out of Berlin, that you can find on truecircles.com. This is the Role Models Podcast. Thanks for listening and enjoy this episode with Laura Brown. Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks. I am honored.
We are excited to have you.
Role models and me.
Role models, the whole entire Role Models community and me are excited to have you. It's been a long time in the making, and I'm glad that we're finally speaking. And so
a very annoying overscheduled person.
Yeah.
So, I become one of those New York overscheduled people, and then I have clashes and whatever else you say in American accent. Anyway, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for taking the time out of your busy day and busy travel schedule. I would love to start, before we go back a little bit to Australia, where you're from, I would love for you to start, for people who are less familiar with the fashion / or intersection of the fashion and the media industry. Could you describe the breadth of your responsibility, your role, your life a little bit, so people could get an understanding of who Laura Brown is?
Laura Brown is tired. The breadth of my responsibility. Okay, so I'm the editor-in-chief of InStyle. I would say magazine because that's what I said, but it's actually the InStyle brand. And we have 1.8 million readers in print and tens of millions in online. My primary responsibility is the print product, but I also work I'm sort of a dotted line to the digital stuff, but I'm very involved in our social media, because print still fuels our greatest social media successes. So I got this job because they knew I could run a magazine, but they also, my bosses knew that I had a social footprint. So I think that's what editors in chief have to have these days. I put out 12 issues of InStyle a year, in which we cover celebrity fashion, a bit of politics, women generally, badass women being my favorite types of women. And then within each issue, we have various prongs that we spin out online and social things. And then on top of that, we have events, we have dinners, we have advertising partnership building. We have coverage of the collections fashion shows going away for that a couple times a year. We have e-commerce extensions. We have all our digital brand extensions. We have, oh my God, what else do we do? Everything. But you know, the idea of bringing the world of style to people, and my whole platform for In Style is that everybody's in and everybody has style. So it's not about you need to have this particular garden or shoe or income or waist size or whatever it is. It's like everybody has something to say and looks a certain way. And so it's really important to me that when you read In Style, you feel included and you don't feel less than. And I think that you can do that through a high fashion lens, which is what, you know, I've taken In Style. Was very celebrity when I got to In Style. Now I've made it a little more fashion, but it's actually weirdly more accessible. Because you take the people that are the quote unquote fancy people and you sort of, they're just human beings, you know, I really strive to bring that out, with people that I work with. So you can, and I love it when I get feedback in the magazine, which is like, I felt better. I laughed, or I was amused, or I was inspired, by what I read. And, but it's still a cool lady, and she can be wearing a really great pair of shoes. You know, I love shoes. So it's not, you know, it's not like we all have our strings to our bow of all of our different titles. And I think that the one that I developed pretty quickly was that. And it's still a fashion magazine. And it's not like there's so many titles and online everywhere. There is all sort of participating in the great woke off, I call it. Like, I'm more woke than you. And I'm like, oh my God, I gotta sleep sometimes. But you know, you can still, like, for me, it's like, here are great women. I'm gonna show you these great women, in whatever sphere of life they're in, and I'm gonna celebrate them. And that's kind of it, you know, every month and every day on the site.
Do you have a way to define the criteria great?
It's women who, it is not very PC. It's women who own their shit.
Oh, you can say whatever you want on this podcast.
It's badass women. And it's women that they work, they have families, they have something to say, something to do. They have some confidence in themselves or something that they can project to help other girls or women who may not do that. It's a solidity. It's a solidity in their character and in their purpose. And I'm just not going to shoot some model because she looks great and has nothing else going on. And I think that sort of what distinguished us in the early months was I wanted to shoot models for InStyle. No one shot models. And InStyle didn't shoot models. And I was like, well, why don't we interview the models? Because they're humans, right? And we'd interview them. And they'd be like, what, you want to talk to me? You just want to stick me in a tiny Saint Laurent mini dress and slump me in a corner? Like, you want to talk to me? And I'm like, yeah, because I'm pretty sure you've got something to say. So I think that I strive to bring that out in everybody we work with, whether they be a 21-year-old model or whether they be a senator or a former first lady or an anti-bullying advocate or a woman who designs missiles or, you know, who's on my wall right now or Serena Williams. You know what I mean? Like, this is – they're all unified in some way. And it's, for me, it's, I love bringing the different stripes of people together in an issue and going, okay, here's her, here's her, here's her, here's her. And they all kind of fall in together. So it's somebody that I'm professionally, I mean, that I'm inspired by personally, who I respect personally, who I want to show other people. I have no desire. There's a million women I could put on the cover who I just are not my flavor. And I don't care if they sell. I don't care if a reader goes, I'm a fan of X, if I just am not down with her, I'm not interested. I'm too old for this, frankly.
So you mentioned you turn around, and for people who cannot see this because of the podcast, but you turn around and you look at the wall and it looks like pages from the magazine, and some are already, I think, defined and some are still placeholders. Yes. Can you describe a bit the process, maybe quickly or briefly, the process of getting to you said that you're mainly involved in the print magazine, the your role in carrying the process to a final magazine?
I am very much kind of the light bulb, you know, and I have a team of exceptional producers. And I know a lot of people. I'm out a lot. I get ideas from a lot of different places. So I will kind of run into work and just be like, because we're very consistent here, and we'll be like, okay, here's so-and-so has a movie at this time. What do you think? And sometimes I'll be like, I always know what's going on in the culture and when people have things, but I sort of metabolize things differently. Like for the first Badass issue, I was like, well, we have to get Serena. You know, Serena Williams is a badass. Like, I mean, she may not be a movie star with a film out in August, but she's that. And so I think there's something to be gained from being in the industry for 24 years almost, which I've been. I know a lot of these people. I know a lot of the PRs. I have a decent amount of trust with them. So I will go. So for the Badass Women issue, which is a, when is this coming out, by the way, this podcast? I'm just trying to think, blowing my own deadline.
So it's next week. So that's that's end of May.
End of May.
Sorry. End of May, beginning of June.
End of May. So for an example, for an issue that I'm planning, so I won't get into it too much, but I know if I've got, say if I'm doing a cover with Serena Williams and I've got a theme, I just intrinsically know that I want an older woman, a younger woman, somebody in the news, somebody in sport, somebody who's a movie star, somebody who's a model. Like you, it's like a recipe. You go, okay, I've got this kind of lady. I need this kind of lady. And it's people I could have watched. And I'm very reactive. Like I won't sit with a lineup. I mean, September issues when I have to plan quite more, I'll plan my fashion sessions out, but I really want to be like, I'm still shooting for the August issue, which is behind me. You know, almost getting towards done, I'm still shooting for that next week because I'm like, no, this has happened in the culture and we need to reflect it. So it's kind of all in my head, and which is why I get tired. But and then I'll go, guys, let's go. And they produce, like they do it excellent, you know. My team are like such pros, so on. And I'll be like, I want to do this lady because of this. And then they understand why, you know. But then I'll be like, on the set, it's really important for social that you get blah blah blah, and I have always approved the video ideas for digital as well, so we get some humorous or warm spin on this woman that is really key, so it rounds everything up, because I'm responsible for 12 prongs of a story. I'm not just not responsible for one. I'm responsible for having the idea, persuading the lady man whatever to show up, then producing the image word story in a compelling way, then designing it, then you know, getting it out in the culture, then PRing it. And it's like producing like a really small movie like over and over again. So I always say I'm more like a producer than an editor, because it's like doing all these mini movies every month and then doing them online and everything else. So it just kind of, and then you look at it and then you end up looking at it on the wall and going, oh, yeah, but I know what we need. I know when there's something missing, what we need. But I also try to keep it pretty organic to women who I really love, and I don't feel obliged, you know, to cover, or because they've got some social following. I don't care, you know. And there's some ladies that I will be after for months. Like, of course, me and everyone else want to do something with Michelle Obama when her memoir comes out in December. So we've been in for that forever. So that kind of thing is long game, but other things are sort of short game. And you just, I don't know, feel it. Makes any sense?
So I'm really not that familiar with the fashion industry, so some of the things I might say may come across
okay.
A bit of ignorant or just
okay.
Like it's completely clueless. So apologize in advance to you, but also to listeners who are in
Don't
the fashion
worry,
industry.
You've got a nice shirt. You're doing well.
Thanks. The way I observe it from an outsider, though, is that it seems to me that you're at the intersection of two industries.
Yeah.
That are in dramatic change, right? So on the one
yes.
hand, you have the fashion industry and the media industry, and then on the other side, you have the technology industry, and you also
yes.
already said that you know, social plays a big element, the different media formats like video, etc., play an important
yeah.
role in how to think about it holistically rather than just
yes.
by media format. So how can you describe how the industry from your perspective now is different than it was when you entered the industry and what those challenges
yes.
are?
I think there's no, it's so funny because there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear about change and budget cuts and everything else. And I think that people are reacting to that fear in different ways. And some of these sort of legacy brands, print brands are struggling a bit because they were sort of used to these huge budgets and doing this and this way of being where we go to fashion shows for 6 weeks of the year or twice. And we do, and that's just not really super sustainable. You know, I never really worked for those super indulgent kind of brands. I always I worked at Harper's Bazaar before, and we had to hustle, even though we had a very storied brand name. I think that I embrace it because for me, with the prongs, there's so many ways to tell a story. So how great, how great that I've got this print magazine. And I tell you, I say this all the time, print is the root of the tree. People show up to get their picture taken. Discount print at your absolute peril, because Oprah Winfrey did a cover for me. Oprah Winfrey doesn't do .com. All these people do covers because we make them look gorgeous, and then it's my responsibility and my job to do a boomerang and 65 iterations of this story. So I think there were a lot of companies, including formerly Time Inc., which no longer exists, which is my former company, we're now bought by Meredith. I think there's an error when you throw the baby out with the bathwater and you just pin everything on digital as well. You know, you end up doing yourself a disservice because we still have 1.8 million readers who read this magazine and who love a beautiful picture. And so it's up to me and it's my responsibility to make the pictures the most beautiful, the most clever, the most arresting, and then to make the video the most funny, the most insightful. And I think if you have an ease with existing on those platforms personally, as for better or for worse, I do, because I don't read enough books. I'm okay at social media. You know what I mean? That's made it a bit easier for me to metabolize all of these changes. And I think sometimes for editors who've been doing things a different way, and they're like, oh God, I've got to be on Instagram and I've got to Insta story the dress I'm wearing today. And I'm like, and sometimes I think that's harder for people, some people than others. And again, maybe they're reading books and I'm not, So I really embrace it. And I think that when you also feel an energy and excitement about what you're producing as a magazine, I think that's compelling to people as well. And a few people have said to me, oh, well, yeah, print isn't dead. You make me excited to read a magazine. And one model agent once said to me that the magazine had the energy of social media, which I took as a great compliment. You've just got to exist in different planes, and you have to not be cowed by it, and you should be sort of casual about it. You can't, when you overplan everything and you overpackage everything and you overproduce everything, that loses its heart as well. Like, I've had actors send me videos from the back of cars about how they love red lipstick. And it's not like this super, like, let's get her on set and talk about, it's like just things in the back of a car. It doesn't matter. It's all telling a story. And what I try and say to, I really hate the word content because I think it sounds like soulless. I say to the social team, video team, digital team, features team, you're telling a story. Each thing you do, each post is a story. And that might sound really old fashioned, but if we don't have storytelling, if we don't have something to say, it doesn't matter what medium you're using, what you're optimizing, what data you're getting, what you're paying for, it doesn't matter if you don't have anything to say.
So if you say I really like the distinction between content, which sounds kind of generic and soulless.
It sounds like flour and bread or something.
And then you replace it with storytelling. Yeah. So yeah. And if you think about it from a perspective of people producing those stories in the media type that they miss, that they're experts in, for example, video or audio or photos, what advice do you share with people who are earlier in their career to think less or to just take a different perspective on what you just said, to say, like, instead of thinking content, think of stories. What advice do you share with people to become good storytellers?
Well, one, my favorite, she says cleaning dust off her keyboard. My favorite thing to say to people is underthink it. Don't overthink. I think Instagram is a really, really great training ground for everybody, because if you're actually able to edit the magazine of your life, which is what Instagram is, and then you can do that everywhere else. Like, you don't have to sit there and angst over your caption or what you're going to say. Your life and what you have to say and how you approach things is good enough because that's you. So I would say embrace that. Embrace what you're saying in the magazine of your life, and then you can embrace what you're saying in a bigger magazine and whatever that is. And just, and it gives you, when you have more familiarity with that medium and you use it more, you get less cowed by it. You get less like, what am I going to say? It's just like, I will bang up a phone in someone's face and go, right, and bang it up. And you just did that right now? I'm like, yeah. Because I have confidence. I obviously know what I'm doing. I'm not going to get anybody sued. Like, I know that, but I say embrace social media and not in a indulge in here's what I had for lunch or here am I in my bikini way. But do that because it's the best training ground and it's a really luxurious training ground for you because it's before you get in the door of these places. You already have this outlet. So don't be afraid of it and have something to say and get behind something and cultivate your own voice in whatever way you can.
So the role of the editor-in-chief in the fashion media world is, you know, sometimes, you know, goddesses-like status or godlike status. So it really institution, not only is a, not only is the medium or the, you know, the title an institution, but the person behind it. You know, there's people here like Alexander Schulman from the British Vogue, or there's Graydon Carter from Vanity Fair, mm-hmm. Anna Wintour, of course, who is probably the most known one who doesn't embrace Instagram. And the question really is when she's gone, when she disappears, when she goes away, when she's not there anymore, what is the, how do you fill the space, or
the next editor will not have an editor who doesn't do it anymore. Like they just, Anna's a singular person and has a singular culture and wildly beyond impressive what she's cultivated over the 30 years she's been at Vogue. You can't be a new editor-in-chief and not have it anymore. It's expected of you. 100%.
So the way I somehow compare it, because the reference point that I have is a tech industry where you have individuals in an industry are being put on a pedestal, like, you know, Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or people like that. And I can see parallels there in the fashion industry. Do you see with those institutions, with people like Anna Wintour, et cetera, like being not replaced, but like a new generation coming in, do you see a more democratization of fashion, of the fashion media?
I'm personally into that. Yeah. I mean, I know I really appreciate. It's so funny. Somebody like me who's like all over the road and somebody like Anna who is exceptionally rigorous, like I really appreciate her rigor. I'm like picking up my phone every day. Like I am running around and like, you know, breathless picking up the Skype to you. Like that's how I am. I am all for, personally, a democratization of fashion while still understanding that beautiful things are beautiful and things can be inspiring and aspirational, that kind of stuff. But what I think some people, and I have an acronym, BFM, bad fashion movie. People act like they're in a bad fashion movie when they try to pretend that fashion is other or better than other people because of whatever thing. I hate that. I have no interest in that because they're not smarter. They're not cleverer. They're not cooler. They're not like, just no one should feel lesser than anyone, you know, or I shouldn't feel lesser than freaking Mark Zuckerberg, or, you know, I really don't like that. I don't participate in cultivating of an otherness of the fashion world. While I'm fully cognizant of, I love beautiful things and beautiful pictures. So I'm not just going to be like, here we all are in our $15 pants. Like but you can exist in a way in the world. So I think that any success that I've had, or the reason that I got this job, or, you know, I am from Sydney. I'm a dairy farmer's daughter. Like I have no rich parents or didn't get slid into some role because of where I'd come from. I worked and I'm proud of it. And I think that when you do get established, I've always been myself, but now I've just sort of doubled down on it. I'm like, right, I just poke everyone all the time. At the shows, I'm like a Labrador. I'm like, hi, Anna. Like, it's me. And I just think everybody should feel okay to be themselves, whether you're an editor-in-chief or whether you're a reader.
So when you say that you worked hard to get where you are, what do you think would be the, you know, top three characteristics or skills or qualities that have helped you to get there where you are?
Being able to – being curious, being mobile, and being kind of – and flexible. God, that's
– Can you – that's good. Can you define mobile?
Mobile as in I moved to London for a couple of years in the late 90s because I wanted to live there and live in Europe. And I would take myself to Paris on my own to the shows and I wouldn't know anyone and no one would talk to me. So quite literally mobile. You know, I moved, went back to Australia, then I moved to New York September the 4th, 2001. Brilliant. Because I was cute, because I wanted to live here and I wanted to move here and I wanted to be in this industry and see things with my own eyes. And so just mobile in terms of physically like going and seeing people and doing things, but going and moving around the globe to where I thought the culture was or where I want it to be, or just mobile, like mentally, you know, like being like, okay, like I will, or even now, like I get a great shoot next week with somebody who's a big coup for us. I'm going to drop everything and go to it. Like it's that kind of thing. And then just flexible where we, I surf. Like I actually sometimes say, if somebody doesn't work out for something, I'm okay. Like I had an old boss who I love, Glenda Bailey, but she always just said, don't take no for an answer. But like, I'm happy taking no for an answer because I don't force things. I don't like to force people. Like things happen in their time and when they're, and I can, with my relationships, I can push them on to hopefully happen when I want them to. But if they don't, I'm fine. There's enough people, there's enough things. And I think if you have an ease and a sort of casualness with people, you develop that trust where things just happen more easily for you. So, you know, I think that anybody knows that they can call me up. Everybody knows that I'll make them look like I'm, again, interested in great women. So I'm not interested in making women look bad because I'm already into the lady that I'm dealing with. And because maybe they know me or they worked with me before more people show up for me now. And that's, I'm so grateful for that. And it's been a long time. So thanks. But, you know, and I think that's it. But I'm happy to be here and I'm enthusiastic about what I do. And I really believe in who I work with. And I can do one great story and ride on that for 6 weeks, the joy of that.
So you mentioned something that I found interesting that I want to maybe go back to is that you surf. You said, you used the word surf through life. And it's, I think, something that people who follow you on Instagram, which I have been doing for a few months now, something that really sticks out. And I think for me, right. You know, again, this is not my industry. I'm not from there. For me, the industry, when I look at it, sometimes appears very serious. With very little room for, you're not taking yourself too seriously, but yes. You are really role modeling this, you know, through your own storytelling that you do on Instagram. Is this something, can you describe to people, how you think about this? Is it something that you consciously think about? Is it something where you want to break through stereotypes or to break with the traditional? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it was less conscious, but as I've gotten more established, I'd say more conscious because, I didn't realize, and again, this is not me big upping myself, but I honestly didn't realize that I would be so unusual when I got into fashion, you know, cause I have a lot of friends in fashion who are funny, who are really funny, but not necessarily publicly funny, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know why. And sometimes, yeah, people in fashion want to subscribe to certain codes or they want to sit in the front row and not like, I'm always the one waving at the child at the front row or like running over and kissing someone and they tell me I've got to get back to my seat because it's show starting. Like I'm always that like idiot. But I have doubled down on it a bit because I just like, I don't have any fear of these people. And I don't think, and a lot of them are really great people and they're just, so they've been sitting there not smiling for years because they felt they should, you know what I mean? And I've gotten to know a great deal of them. And I have new friends who have been working at Vogue for 25 years who are great women who you might think because they're sitting there not smiling that they're like mean, but they're great. But you just have to, and I also really, really like unlocking that in people like, and just being like, come on. Let's go and bring in the fun. We have great jobs. We have great jobs and we don't have to subscribe to this. But I also feel, so I feel really strongly about that. But I also feel because it's a tougher time in our business with closings and people losing jobs, that people are getting a little kinder on the whole. And with our president and all this stuff we have to deal with day to day in the United States, there's a bigger game at play. So why are we going to be so worried about if someone wore the wrong shoes? Like, who gives a shit? You know, so I think that it's the way I've always been. It's the way I've doubled down on. But I do think that people are kind of, we're sort of tired and we're working hard and people have families and really, you really want to subscribe with, like, you're the cool one that got into the club and hung out with this designer and his model friends. You, that's what you got. If you really care about that, Godspeed to you, but not my flavor.
So another thing you mentioned, or better name that you mentioned earlier, is Glenna Bailey, and it's maybe a good segue into the next topic that I wanted to speak to you about, is that I spent 8 years at SoundCloud, which in the tech industry is, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years longer than average tenure in a tech company. And you have been at Harper's for 11 years before going to Insta. And how did you think about these 11 years? Because what's the reason you stuck there for 11 years?
It's a long time, but it changed so much. Like, it was like a million different jobs. Like, I started as like an articles editor, I think it was, or articles director. And it was like, I thought I would be editing like a couple of essays a month, right? Like, just sort of like features essays. And then I put my hand up to book celebrities for covers, which was the most masochistic thing. But anyway, and so I started like doing all the celebrity stuff. And then I started having these conceptual ideas about these celebrity things. So I'd start sort of creating, directing these sort of celebrity portfolios, but then I would have all these art portfolio ideas or directors. And so I ended up building a really large creative stamp on Bazaar, even though I'd come from quite a strict features background. So by the end of it, I was doing, you know, I mean, one of my first big collaborations with The Simpsons, which was a huge hit, or like, by the end of it, I was working with like Cindy Sherman or Steven Spielberg or all these amazing people. So the work was super rewarding in what we were producing. I mean, I can't say by the last couple of years that I wasn't sort of idling a little bit, you know, I mean, but the work was, and I was like, okay, well, something's going to, like, I was sort of doing a bit of consulting stuff. And I was like, well, and at the same time, people would say to me, do you want to be an editor? And I was doing a bit of TV. And people would say, do you want to be an editor in chief? And I'd be like, well, sure, but like, no one's leaving. Like, I'm not going to like plot somebody's demise. You know, I was like, well, if somebody one day is like an editor in chief, like, well, I'm going to go and farm pumpkins. And I'll be like, great. Like, I have no desire to calibrate somebody's, you know, removal from their job. And so I was kind of like, okay. Yeah. Hanging out a bit. And then Ariel Foxman, who was a former editor of InStyle, left. I might've gone on my own. I don't know what I would have done. But again, it was, the work was super sustaining, and I had 4 jobs when I was there, for sure.
In what way has Glenda influenced your life and career?
She's just, Glenda is a great friend, and we have mutual real respect for each other. And I think we had a cultural commonality, like British Australian, like that helped her. I appreciate Glenda's tenacity. She is the most tenacious woman you'll ever meet. I call her Tenacious G, and I had to explain that there was a band, Tenacious D, and she was
School of Rock.
She didn't know any of this. Yeah, she didn't know any of this. And she goes, I said, it's Tenacious, and she went, little pause, and she went, oh, I like that.
what's an example for her tenacity?
Oh, God. One day she was like, you got to call Michelle Obama's office in the White House like every day. And I was like, no, I'm going to get deported. Like, you know, like just like stuff like that. You know, she just literally, the sky's the limit for Glenda. And the sky, like literally she will shoot everybody in the sky on a swing, floating, hanging off a building, on a plane. Like, I always laugh with her. I said, I'm just going to shoot my girls on the ground this week. She's a badass. She's been doing this a long time. There's been a lot of change around her. She's weathered a lot of rumors, a lot of bullshit, a lot of, you know, I have so much respect for her. She's got a spine, man.
What's the best piece of advice she has given you?
Oh, geez, probably over wine. I don't know. We have like secret packs sometimes. We're just like, well, if this happens, we're going to have a drink. She's just an ally. that was proud of me when I was leaving, even though I was a big loss to leave. That bizarre, because we were really close. My biggest supporter, and when the company, I was leaving the company, and that was a bit tricky, but she was like, Laura, I'm so proud. Go. And we sit together at the shows. We get sat together all the time. And at the beginning, people were like, is it going to be awkward to sit you and Glenna together? I'm like, no, you're kidding. We want to. So we sit there and we go, ha, 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 ha. You know what I mean? I have a cackle and a little gossip. And I'm just forever glad to see her.
So in the people that you work with day in, day out, what is something that is really important to you about the way they approach life or work,
right,
or something that you're not willing to compromise on, something that you really paid close attention to deliver a great work?
Energy. I don't like when people fall into passivity or just like, oh, I did this thing. And I'm like, come on, you know, that's not that interesting. You know, you could try a little bit harder. I love it if people walk in my door with mad news or a mad idea, you know, and not just like, oh, okay, I did the layout and I put the headshot in, and the older in style was a bit like that. It was very packaged, and I had to be like, just blow it up. But then giving people, and it took a while culturally because they were so used to doing it another way. But then when you blow it up, and then you give people ownership over the thing that you blew up and go, that was yours, you did that, they get so proud, and they've gotten so proud. My photo department, our photographers we work with versus a year and a half ago, are night and day different. You know, we've grown so much. And they're really proud. They're like, oh, we got this one. You know, so it's energy. And if they have energy and they produce, then they get ownership. And that is all you want, you know. And we've come so far in the time I've been here that I'm really proud of everyone. But, yes, people have got to pony up. And then if everybody just ponies up and produces, this place is like walking on rainbows. We're a really happy place. You know, we are a really good bunch of people who really like and respect each other. And I want everyone to do good work, get on, go home, have a glass of wine, be with their family, come back the next day. Nothing needs to be complicated. I don't do passive aggression. I don't do politics. I'm a basic Australian girl. We do great work. We get proud of it. Then we do more. Good.
Where do you see people who enter the fashion or fashion media world misallocate energy or time or effort? And
right.
Where would you advise them to spend most of the time for the highest return?
I think get yourself on the ground, like get yourself into the place where you want to be. Internships, you know, I mean, and the amount of people that I've hired over my career, at least here, who've been former interns. I say I'm like building a little island colony of like cool girls who used to be my interns. Get in the door, get the lunch. Like some people like, don't think you're too good for anything, because I always say, I'm so busy all the time when I'm in the office, I barely get out to go to the bathroom. People will be like, Laura, I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom. Give me 2 minutes. But get the lunch, because my intern right now, Asia, who's like my assist, like in my office, she gets in my lunch when I'm sitting here because I can't get out. And she has more FaceTime with me than people in half the different departments. Well, I love her. Like, and she's my first choice that I would hire if I could there, you know, and because she went and got me my salmon and rice.
How do you select, like when you said get on the ground, and internships, for example, how can somebody stand out from the crowd?
Write me a great letter, you know, quite honestly, like find my email. There's ways to do it, or my assistant's email. And I will always respond to a really cool, fun, gracious letter, always. Or if something, I have like friends, like I have a friend right now who's a chef whose friend, his friend's daughter went to a school and write me a great letter. You know what I mean? It's not like it's somebody's rich dad. It's people find their way to me, and if they find their way to me through a little bit of hustle, I really appreciate it. And then I will do anything to have them here. And I know immediately if they've got the DNA for this, if they've got an ease with me, and they speak the language of this magazine, I know it right away. And then I clock them, and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to build you. I'm going to water them. They're like little plants. I water them.
Do you remember the biggest risk that you've taken in your life, or maybe as an editor-in-chief?
As an editor, I think my biggest in my life was moving to New York, I'd say, and then having moving to New York, what turned out being 7 days before September 11, that was pretty cool. That was latently risky, I guess. Biggest risk as an editor-in-chief? I don't know if it's risk or if it's – I don't think belief in yourself is a risk, frankly. Belief in yourself and belief in others, I don't see that as a risk. Some people who do things differently might say I take risks by like taking stupid pictures of myself that aren't like as chic as other people's, you know, like bowing on the floor to Mr. Valentino the other day. Probably might go, people might go, ooh, I wouldn't do that. I don't care. You know, I don't really care. I think a risk is putting your political career on the line to speak up. I think a risk is taking the knee at an NFL game. I think a risk is a million other things that I don't think in my world. I think the stakes are much lower in my world.
So we're running a bit out of time. So conscious of the time we have left. And I want to make sure we place the last three questions that we ask every guest on the podcast. Ooh. But the one thing that I wanted to ask you is something that is to go back to something you said earlier when we talked about the industry as a whole. And then you said that there's a lot of fear around.
Yes.
Are you scared of something?
No.
Why not?
I think when you work in this business a long time, or work in any business a long time, I think you develop personal equity, right? And it took me a while to kind of realize this, because when you are from somewhere else and you've always mythologized this business, and I'm from a Sydney and then I come to New York and it's supposed to be all fancy, and everyone's going to be smarter than me or more connected than me or more, and they're not. I realized this, number one. Two, like when all the, you know, I have had occasions to think about this when there's been so much change going on with my business, particularly within my company, particularly to think about, and I had sort of had an epiphany a little while ago. I was like, I have enough personal equity that I would be fine with whatever I chose to do. And that gives you ease. That gives you ease. And I know I could do various different things. And I don't, in style, which is also very much part of my character, I think we're very inextricable. But I'm not defined. I don't hitch my wagon to in style. And I know that because I've been doing this a long time now and people know who I am. And that often came through social media. You know, so no, I'm not. And that's a weird thing to say, but I'm not afraid.
What's the most...
My God.
No, this is a great thing just to realize about yourself. You could share a piece of advice about how to... the most effective way to build personal equity, what would you say?
Do good work, be good to people.
Period. Good. We're moving into the last segment already.
You show up for them. Yeah, you show up for them, they'll show up for you. Always.
So the last segment are three questions that we ask every guest on the podcast and also in the events that we do here in Germany. And the first one is, I'll ask it again, even though you've spoken a bit about skills earlier with mobility and flexibility, etc. But the question is, what is the three skills that you recommend that young people early on in their career start developing and mastering, which are portable across different industries or different all the way throughout their career? So basically timeless evergreen skills.
Storytelling. Then storytelling via social media or whatever way you want to do it. Humility. The ability to show up and say you're going to do the work and then just do it. I find, especially with young people, because you can get overshoot so much on social, and I think that you have to develop it. And read the room. I like the saying, learn to read the room. Relationships with people are it. That's all. And of course, for me, that's more than anyone because I'm in communications, but read the room. There's a way to get noticed and a way not to get noticed. Really understand where you are and get yourself to where you want to be. If it is a party or a conference or an office, or then really pay attention to who's around you and that dynamic that there is. And then then you'll be successful. I honestly think I have an ability to read the room. And I think that's behind any success that I've had. I get along with people, or I can recalibrate to certain people, not being myself. But we are surrounded by this mass of different characters, and especially in journalism, I come across them all the time. And once when you know how to read the room, you will go a long way.
That's a great one. This is the Role Models podcast, and I was wondering, do you have role models yourself?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not that sounds terrible that I don't think of them right away. I guess I'm a different cat because I'm sort of this only child, and I just kind of put my head down and did my thing, and I wasn't like, I want to be like blah, 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 you know. People that I in this universe, I'm not just talking about women now who are role models to me. I mean, who just inspire me. It's obviously like Michelle Obama, Serena Williams. I love this woman, Mary Lou Robinson, who invented these missiles that disarm nuclear weapons. Like women who have – I just read about this because I was writing about it for the Badass Women thing. It's people who make change or do something. It's not who are consistent. Women who are consistent. I was saying history is kind of littered with women who have done something that's changed history, like suffragette, throwing themselves in front of a horse or whatever. But it's the women who kind of plug away that I really, really admire. Like, there's a woman called Saruja Ramayan who runs the restaurant. She's a restaurant worker advocate. She's part of the Time's Up movement. And she was telling us at this dinner we had the other day, she was like, who's been a waitress? More or like, and she said, you know, in some states, the minimum wage is $2.70. And we were like, what? So some people like Saru who exist in this world and fight for people who can't fight for themselves, but cross different spheres and speak so eloquently and fight for these ladies without necessarily applause every day. That's who inspire me. And that's why I sort of started Badass Women, you know, in the first place. Cause I was like, these women are badass and we have to show them and we have to help. And so it's not just like everybody can talk about the prominent women, but it's when it's women that I haven't necessarily heard of that I find that I go, oh my God, like Amy Vitale, who's a wildlife photographer, who's on the back of thing. There's a bunch of elephants back there who, you know, is a Nat Geo photographer who's saving elephants. Like I just cool ladies, man. Just cool ladies.
The last question we ask every guest, and then we have to let you go. No, this is great. This is great. Yeah. Is if we go back, you and I go back to Australia, a suburb in Sydney, and we meet the 14-year-old Laura Brown.
Yes, she had a perm.
That's great. That's a great image.
We shan't speak of that again. Yeah, go on.
What advice do you give her at that age?
You'll get there. You'll get there. Because it was very, you know, it was so far. All of this was like, I mean, geographically far, metaphorically far, all of it. You'll get there. Calm down.
This is great. Laura, you've been very generous with your time. Where do you want to point people to? Where can people find you? You mentioned Instagram.
Instagram, Laura Brown. Instagram and Twitter, Laura Brown 99.
Laura Brown 99.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And I hope we can do this again because I have so many more things that I would love to talk to you about.
Sure. And call me when you're in New York and ping me on Insta so I'll find you.
I will. Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you to Laura for taking the time to share her story and the many insights with us. This episode was produced with the help of Kate Lewin. And if you liked this episode, then don't miss some of the previous episodes we did of the Role Models podcast. For example, with Tina Roth Eisenberg, also known as Swiss Miss, who talks about how she turned her side projects into successful businesses. As always, we love hearing from you. So if you have a moment and would like to support this podcast, please share this episode with your friends on Instagram stories. We're @_role models and on Twitter, we're @role models. And what really helps us are reviews and ratings on iTunes. So in any case, thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And until next time.